I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello everyone and welcome to this. It's the Rugby Dungeon. Thank you for listening, thank you for subscribing, and of course thank you for leaving me reviews on iTunes. It is much appreciated. If possible, go follow me on Twitter. I'm at Jay Beardmore. You've got the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast at Rugby Podcast, and of course there is this podcast at the Rugby Dungeon. But if you want to follow someone else, you can follow my guest today. That is Josh Beaumont. How are you, Josh?
Not too bad, thank you. Well, I'd much rather have been playing in a European semi this weekend, but it's always nice to have the odd weekend off towards the end of the year. So, no, it's been great in this weather.
Did you watch the European games this weekend?
I did. I pretty much watched until I knew the result of kind of both games. So, watched the first 50 minutes essentially of both main of the Champions Cup, and then bits and bobs of the Challenge Cups. But
I've not seen any Challenge Cup yet, except for the second half of the Gloucester game, and they look very impressive.
Yeah, they did. It's a bit of an odd team, Gloucester. We played them at the start of the year and
hammered them.
Absolutely hammered them, but they were a good team, and that was just almost, you get these freak results sometimes where everything goes to you on the night, and that was it. But no, they were really good. Ackerman's coming in, he's brought that kind of speed to Faf and Ruan when they were here.
Yeah, it's weird.
The kind of free-flowing rugby that he wants them to play, so you can see there's been a big shift this season with them.
And it's weird, when you talk to anyone who's worked with Ackerman before, they talk to him like he's, you know, half man, half god. I mean, you know, the perception of him from his rugby players is, you know, seriously high.
Yeah, speaking to Faf, you know, calls him Coach Ackerman. It is like Coach Ackerman. It's a bit of a strange word, but he speaks really high, and he's almost like a father figure to his players. You know, they all speak so highly of him, and so, you know, he must be a good guy.
What was your overriding takeaway from the games this weekend?
I just thought, like, I had a feeling Leinster were going to win, and they just looked so impressive. They're just on the front foot all the time. They don't do anything too flash. They almost kind of kick deep to Scarlets, let them kick out, you know, 40 metres out, and then just play this power game where they're always on the front foot, the dynamic ball carrying, they're so strong at the breakdown.
Yeah.
And Scarlets had no way into the game, and the defence was, the line speed was great, and yeah, you know, just, they were so impressive, and I can't see anyone beating them, really, even though Racing had those X-Factor players, as we saw today. They looked seriously sharp in our first half today as well, so, you know, it should be a pretty good final.
Yeah, do you know what, my overwhelming takeaway across both the games, actually, is power wins. Like, power is the new whatever it is, but that is first and foremost. You look at Leinster, I mean, it's like you say the ball carriers are really dynamic. I'm not taking anything away from their backs, I don't mean to, but their backs are just common sense, make the right decisions backs. You know, you've got guys like Nathewa. I don't think he's made a mistake for about 3 years now.
I know, he's probably about 36 as well. It's incredible.
He's on the wing.
I know, and they had likes of James Lowe missing as well the weekend. Just the strength and depth, and yeah, you say like Henshaw in the centre, he's kind of just, you know, you kind of look at the way he's just a simple player, but he's so effective.
Yeah.
He just gets over that game line, hits good lines. The same with Ringrose, really. He's a bit more wiry, a bit more skillful, but yeah, just really good players. Very rarely make too many errors.
Yeah, so I was kind of thinking about them today, which is, they are so dominant with what they do, and yet they've got such big names in the backs. They never seem to use them. What scares me about them is, this might kind of be the tip of the iceberg. Like, if they could conceivably lose out in the power game, and they've still got all that experience from Johnny Sexton back to Dave Carney to fall back on.
Exactly, yeah, and got Carberry coming off the bench as well. Mm. I think the thing is with, especially in Ireland, because they have got a small playing pool.
Yeah,
but
it doesn't feel like it. It doesn't.
And but a lot of players get exposure to international rugby. You know, look at, I know it was easier in the summer when the Lions tour was on, so they could butt a lot of these players. But you know, they do, you know, expose them to international rugby, and that seems to help. And they tend to always only play the big games.
Yeah.
Which I think helps as well, and playing in front of sold-out stadiums in the, at the Aviva, and obviously Toman Park's a great atmosphere down there as well. So it's, you know, they used to play in these high-pressure games, and they seem to always come good.
Yeah, that is interesting. Do you think Ireland expose more people to international rugby than, say, England do?
Maybe the odd game in the autumn and the summer. It's almost like they have not easy summer tours, but they always have one or two games in the summer. Like I think they're playing USA. No disrespect to USA, yeah, but you know, you can. There's less risk with playing, kind of blooding these guys in those kind of games. There's less pressure, less media attention around these games. So where England have three tests down in South Africa, and it can be a bit of a, you know, to throw kind of an inexperienced team in there, it's a tough ask. So.
Yeah, it's an absolute war down in South Africa. Maybe not so much the United States.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's maybe, you know, that's where they get more of a chance. I'm sure England would do. I mean, we saw that in the Autumn Internationals. They probably played more players than they usually do this year round. So, I think it's probably easier for them to do that.
How old are you, Josh?
I'm 26.
26. Did you grow up watching the Churchill Cup?
I did, yeah. And I know a few guys have played in that as well. And it seems like ages ago now. But
it does, doesn't it?
Yeah, it seemed like a good tour to go on there, definitely.
That's exactly what I was thinking. If there was an international rugby tour that I'd like to go on most, it would be the Churchill Cup.
Yeah, I've heard some pretty good stories of, you know, going to Denver or wherever it was.
Denver.
Vancouver and just, yeah, you're playing against Canada, you know, USA. Not the toughest of fixtures, but pretty good social scene as well around there. So I think... you know, obviously you want to be going on the main England tour, but it's not a bad, second choice to be on.
No, not at all. I think you're probably on something there with Ireland and how they structure their season. Because one of my bugbears at the moment is watching, well, it's capture teams, and we'll get on to that later. But also the standard of A-team rugby. So if you're playing England A, like you've got no time to prepare. It doesn't give you a real feeling of what it is to play proper international rugby. It just doesn't really suit the need the way that, say, some full internationals but easier games would.
Yeah, I mean, I can't remember last time. Yeah, I played in the England game against the Barbarians a couple of times, and you know, it's always a great fixture to be a part, and it's always a tricky one because you got the Prem final same weekends.
But yeah,
I didn't play, but against the Irish Wolfhounds a couple of years ago. And yeah,
was that the one with Sam Burgess in it?
Yes, he did play actually. Yeah, I got.
You got the try assist.
Yeah, I got like a late call up. Yeah, I think I can't remember who was it. Matt Garvey might have been struggling, you know, 50-50 to play. So I got called in, and I was only there for a day. But I remember Burgess was there, and it was actually a pretty strong team, very good backline, I remember. But
I remember it was like Devoto was playing, Burgess was playing.
I remember Wade might have scored a try, and I think I remember that was Maro's first Saxons game.
Was it really?
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, I remember because he came off the bench, and that was like the start of his progression.
He's done all right since.
Yeah, he's not done bad, has he? But yeah, it was a good team that day. But that was again. It's like guys had a Premiership game the weekend before, so yeah. You don't really train properly until Wednesday, and it's more of like a team, and you know, they're all trying to. It's almost like a trial game for the Six Nations.
How hard is that? Because obviously, when you play at your club, you're quite structured. England have a lot of exposure to their players. They get support in their structures. Presumably, you met Sam Burgess once, for instance. This is just an example, and then probably didn't play with him ever again. It must be quite hard to, you know, fit into that team.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be pretty difficult for everyone. I think that's why you've just got to have kind of simple structures in place for those kind of games, and don't overcomplicate things, and just kind of let the guys go out and play. I think, you know, it's I was watching kind of the actually watching like wrestling today. It's like rugby's actually quite simple when you just
they are a very simple
like,
team.
Run hard and win clean ball and fast ball and that kind of thing. So. Yeah, it's obviously England, you know, you get at least 2 weeks before a test match to kind of prepare, and you know, guys have been playing with each other for a while, so it's a bit easier.
Yeah, the only problem I see at the moment with the England setup and the way it kind of, you know, the way that they build things is you almost have to have the reputation of an England player to be an England player. It's quite an exclusive group, and it seems like it's getting harder to get into that. You know, you don't have as many opportunities to prove yourself in the Premiership. Well, no, you do, but yeah, I think they.
To be fair to Eddie, I think he's not scared of kind of dropping people and picking players on form. So I think as long as you're playing well, then you've always got a chance. And
yeah,
you just got to keep playing well, and once you get down into these camps, it's kind of completely different, because then you've got to impress in training equally, and where it's slightly different from, say, being at Sale or being at your home, being at your club, where you know you're so used to surrounding, you're so used to the training schedule, training patterns. So you know, it's, you know, that's the first challenge, getting into the squad, and the next challenge is trying to impress.
Yeah, getting yourself known as, you know, the guy that he can rely on, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and there's probably, you know, there's definitely a core of England players there at the moment who, especially being on Lions tours and played a number of years international rugby, that you can rely on.
Do you subscribe to, I'm not going to call it conspiracy theory, but I think that I subscribe to it, that some of, that Sale maybe don't get as much representation as he should?
Oh, I think, you know, I'm sure you'll get a more interesting answer off Dines about that one. But yeah, I think that's changed. I think it's changing. You know, there was certainly that. I remember when I first joined the club, that was certainly the mindset of every...
There is certainly some gamesmanship going on there. Some, what do they call it in Manchester United? Like fortress mentality.
Yeah.
Everyone's against us.
Yeah, I know. I think Dines quite enjoys that in a way sometimes. But
I think he might do
as
well.
Yeah, I think, a few years ago you could certainly see that, you know, if you weren't playing, they tend to pick from the clubs playing Champions Cup rugby week in, you know, every year.
Mm.
And because they've been exposed to big games. But I think we've seen, you know, especially I think the summer tour last year helped to Argentina, you know, kind of like some, you know, Tom Curry, Denny playing. So, you know, it shows that there is opportunities there.
One of my favourite bits of commentary from that tour actually was someone describing Mike Haley as running like a Labrador.
Yeah, well, he's been watching his dog too much, hasn't he?
But yeah, it's a good tour, and actually quite a lot of Sale representation too. Did you go on that tour?
No, I got knocked out in a Barbarians game, and it was my second, which is probably a good, you know, because I think I took a bit of a bang in training as well a couple of weeks before, so it was definitely the safest thing. But I was absolutely good. So I was meant to go on that tour, but I wasn't initially selected. But you know, guys had got injured, dropped out. So yeah, I was, you know, pretty gutted, but.
What is it like preparing for a Barbarian store? Is that, do the England team approach that with a full international mentality?
Yeah. Last year it was, definitely.
Was it?
The first year, first time I played in that game was pre-World Cup that summer.
Mm.
So it was kind of I think England were going into, like, they obviously named the 52-man World Cup squad. And
yeah.
So a few lads who were in that squad were playing in that game, and that camp started like 3 weeks after that, so the rest of us, it was kind of like we had our holidays booked, kind of, and it was quite relaxed, not relaxed, but obviously it's serious when you're training, but where last year was like a full international build up, which is good. I think we had a week training in Brighton before, and then Penny Hill Park week of the game, so exactly as it were a test match.
Why Brighton? Why do they select that place?
I don't know. I'd love to. I think Eddie Jones went there with Japan and really likes it.
There you go.
He says the seaside air is good for you, and I can vouch for that, coming living by the seaside. But yeah, they could have done it in Blackpool. That would have been a bit more sociable for the northern lads who had to traipse down to Brighton.
So that's where you grew up then, around Blackpool. Is that right?
Yeah, I grew up in Lytham, literally 2 minutes round the corner from Fylde Rugby Club. So that's always been my home rugby club, and went to school in Blackpool. So, yeah, I'm a fairly local lad.
Was it Arnold?
Arnold, yeah. No longer exists, but...
Oh, does it not?
Yeah, joined a few years after I left, it joined with King Edwards.
Off.
Yeah, joined up with King Edwards, all arch rivals. So, Yeah, no longer exists, which is a bit sad, but...
Alright, never knew that. I do know that Fylde is a fantastic club, though.
Yeah, I have great memories from the club, you know, growing up from age of seven, and then as soon as I finished school, I went, you know, did straight into pre-season there, and that was actually the year when Jason Robinson signed for us.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, it was unbelievable. Brian Ashton was coach, and I played there 4 years, and they were, you know, we've been relegated from National One this year, but, you know, it was an unbelievable kind of, we played in a great brand of rugby, it was so much fun to play in, and, you know, we were just given responsibility for whatever we did on the pitch, and, you know, playing a season with Jason Robinson at the age of 18 was pretty cool.
That's very cool. Yeah, Brian Ashton moves in mysterious ways. He had a little bit of import with you guys not so long ago. That might have been before your time, actually. And also did a little bit of at Vale of Loon too.
Yeah, because he lived in Lytham, and then a couple of years ago moved up to Lancaster. So, yeah, that's obviously a local club there, and he did a bit there. But I'm not sure. I think he still pops down to Fylde occasionally now. But he was, his training sessions are always quite entertaining.
So, I mean, how does he set you up to play?
We weren't allowed to kick. Genuinely, we weren't allowed to kick.
Is that right?
Yeah, so we didn't kick it. I don't think we kicked the ball, unless we got a penalty and kicked a touch, yeah. But we didn't kick a ball. Occasionally to clear our lines, maybe, but even then he'd be grumpy in the stand going, why the bloody hell are you not kicking?
did you ever play with Kieran Brooks when he was there?
No, Kieran played the year before me, and the year before that, he was a couple of years older than Kieran, so he then went off to Newcastle, so he didn't get, but... You know, my brother was captain there for a couple of years and played with Kieran. So,
what position does your brother play?
He's number eight.
Or is he? I should say.
They always say he's just retired actually, but he always claims he's the best number eight in the family. But I played more kind of six and second row with when he was in the back row. So it was, it was just good fun to be
so
play with.
One of my very few rugby highlights was we drew Fylde in the cup. It was Broughton Park, who I used to play for. I went over there. I just moved from wing to flanker. And earlier on in the game, Fylde have got a winger. What's it, Ollie someone?
Ollie Brennan, yeah.
Ollie Brennan.
Yeah.
Danced underneath his own posts and then went around the outside of the entire team and scored. Like nothing that I've seen. And I came on fresh at flanker, saw him, lined him up, absolutely nailed him. And that was actually the highlight of my entire rugby career.
Oh, I'll have to. I've still seen quite a bit actually, Ollie. So I'll have to remind him of that and see if he won't remember. He most certainly won't. He'll probably remembers his tries. The only guy to be happy when, say, if we lost and he scored a hat trick, he'd be on one with a smile. Typical winger, really.
Yeah, that's his spirit. Yeah, he got a hat trick against us in the first 20. It was quite impressive.
Yeah, we had. I remember my first couple of years had Ollie on one wing and then Nick Royal.
Played as well.
Yeah, he's playing at Coldy now, but he was England sevens, so he was on the other wing.
Rapid.
And Robinson at fullback only for the home games. They didn't play away games, but so that back three was they scored an absolute shed load of tries because everyone just wanted to tackle Jason Robinson.
Yeah,
so you had like three people going to tackle him, and he just shipped the ball on.
So, I never actually saw him play for Fylde. Was he when you played with him? Did you get a sense that he was Jason Robinson? If that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. I remember I remember he was struggling with his hammy a bit, but he was still. No, I'd never been exposed to kind of professional rugby at the age of 18, and I remember him. He was always down early at training, and then going out early with the lads warming up, and just trying to help everyone. And I was like, you could tell that he'd been in the professional game for a while, and then you just do some things and you kind of cruise for a while and then you just flick the switch and then step up four players and then just, yeah, he had great skills. So it wasn't obviously the vintage Robinson of kind of his...
relative, I guess.
Career, but yeah, he still had it.
So I remember this about Robinson because obviously it's a local club. We're relatively local to Blackpool here. I mean, the outrage was that he would never go to away games. So, you know, you never got to see him if you were, I don't know, if you're a Coldy or some sort of thing. You had to go to Fylde.
Yeah, I remember that, actually. Yeah, I remember all the away teams were, you know, they used to publicise it before the game and Jason and everyone got excited. And then, I can't remember, I think we played Morley away, our first away game of the season. And everyone, because he's originally from Leeds around there, so everyone
is
thought...
Is he? Yeah. Oh, yeah, he is. He's from Chapel Town or something,
yeah,
isn't
he? He came to watch the game but didn't play, and I remember there was outrage there, because everyone...
I'd be outraged.
Like, I think they had the biggest crowd of the season there, and, like, everyone wanted to see Jason Robinson not...
Isn't it amazing, like, the difference just one player can make to, like, the like spectators and all the rest
of it? I know, I remember, because our first game of the season, our first home game was Preston Grasshoppers, so... Hmm. Big rivalry, and there was like 2,500 there.
Was there?
Yeah, it was, and yeah, and just everyone. It's amazing. What, how far did you get? Kind of 600-700 to a game.
I mean, that's still pretty good, though.
Yeah, like it was kind of like all full down the sides and great atmosphere, and yeah, and then those crowds kind of, you know, well, it didn't get as big as that, but
yeah,
you know, there's always well over 1,000 there in most games, which is pretty cool.
So I always think it's amazing when I hear about the Cumbrian teams, because we're in a league with those boys. I think Kendall Kirby Lonsdale got a couple of thousand people watching. That's like level 8 rugby or level 7 rugby.
Yeah, well,
there's nothing else to do there.
Yeah,
though,
there is. There's not much.
What are your options? Go hiking.
Kendall away was always a. Well, it wasn't exactly the highlight of the year. It was always pretty miserable up there.
And they're all big boys, too.
Yeah.
And they're all
their front row was massive. I can't know. I think they're all farmers.
I know exactly the guy I mean, because he was still playing when I played. And he's just... He doesn't move far, but he's enormous. He's like... No word of a lie. He's probably Helani Alika enormous. I mean, no, not the same body composition,
yeah,
but probably the same body mass.
Yeah, I think there was... Yeah, they're always up for it as well when we came up there. Always keen for a scrap, so...
Now, you said earlier on, like, your brother played 8 and you played more 6 and second row. Now, I'm pretty sure we've put on record, and we're probably wrong here, did you not have a stint in the backs when you were younger?
Yeah, I played in the backs until probably about 16, 17, like my lower 6 year, so I was a back.
Okay,
and then it was actually Dave Wilkes, who did a bit of coaching.
Dave Woods, you say?
Wilkes.
Oh, Wilkes, right, yeah.
He played at Farden. He was like the academy coach at Farden. Him and a guy called Alan Holmes they said, why don't you give the forwards try? Because you're kind of 6'6" at the age of 17 and you're still messing around in the backs.
Yeah.
They said, you've got the potential to kind of, you know, go somewhere with rugby, but never as a back. So I moved to the forwards and then, yeah, you know, played at school, but in a bit for kind of Lancashire 18s, North of England, and then went up to Durham University. I think that transition of playing university rugby and national league rugby really helped me. And
yeah,
I think it's worked out great for me, because the kind of skill set I picked up in the backs, you know, I just had to kind of learn the kind of nitty gritty stuff of the forwards, and then still was able to hang out in the channels and pretend on the back still.
Very, very Haranordic-y.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of, well, that's the way that I remember at Fowler, that's the way Brian wanted me to play. He said you were at 6, be the link between the backs and the forwards. And then university, I played all second row, so it was a bit different, but
yeah,
it was kind of less physical, so you could, you know, you could play the tight stuff as well there. So, and then, yeah, got signed up by Sale kind of end of my second year at university.
Ah, right, okay, so, because I knew you weren't an academy lad.
No, I wasn't, so I'd never had much interest in Sale, probably because I moved positions late, and so that's what, you know, as much as I'd always, you know, growing up, I always wanted to be a professional rugby player, but I went to university with no real ambition of becoming a professional rugby. I went to get a degree and had a year at, I was associated with Falcons for a year, so I did a pre-season with them.
Okay.
Played a couple of A-League games, and then, yeah, got offered a contract by both, and you know, I thought Sale was going in the right direction at the time, which is probably a good decision because Falcons got relegated that year.
Oh,
so,
did they?
Yeah, it was 2012, maybe they got relegated. So,
yeah, double-edged sword that for young players, because obviously you want to stay in the Premiership, but you get so much more game time.
Yeah, well, that's what he was saying. That was. I remember him saying to me, "He's like, look, we're going." And it's actually Dean Richards said, "Look, we want you to sign because, you know, we're going to the Championship, and it'd be perfect to kind of development," which I can see, like, that would make a lot of sense. But it was the kind of the year when Sale were showing the ambition. I think they signed Richie Gray and a couple of other lads that season.
Yeah.
And then so I decided to go with Sale, did a pre-season, and my second year with Sale, really, really enjoyed it. And then I remember being at university and Sale didn't win a game until November, and I was like,
oh dear,
oh, I haven't made the right decision here. But you know, they came, yeah, a bit of a troubled year, but then obviously survived the
Diamond's got a knack for navigating himself around the league. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, I think I can't, because Diamond was there, but then he wasn't in charge of that coaching side when first joined. He was.
Was it Redpath then?
Yeah, it was Brush. Brush was there, and then I wasn't there when kind of John Mitchell came in for that month or whatever.
3 weeks.
Yeah, 3 weeks. I was at university then, so I missed all that. But then, yeah, I think Diamond took more of control.
Mm. So you must be quite open to suggestion or quite coachable, because how did you react when someone said to you, right, you know, you're enjoying your time at the backs, presumably you were quite good at it, and they said, right, go on, move over to second row?
Yeah, I think I was always all right in the backs. I was pretty decent enough skills.
Mm.
Thought I had a decent kicking game, but you know, I'm sure plenty of my mates told me that was rubbish. But yeah, I just kind of, yeah, the more I was going, the kind of just, I think I probably wanted to move to the forwards as well.
Cause, it did, yeah.
Yeah,
well, that's a bit different then.
Yeah, I know. I think, yeah, I don't know what, I can't really remember why, but I probably took on listening to their advice and took it rather than trying to push on. Because I played a bit of kind of counter rugby in the backs, like Lancashire 15s. Mm. But then I remember I didn't get picked for like the 16s and 17s as a backs, and you know, it's kind of a sign that you should move as well.
How much influence has your dad had on your career? Does he often give you feedback on your games?
Yeah, he does. Yeah. It'd be, you know, I'd be lying if I said like we didn't talk about rugby or anything. But we talk about
stock market or something.
We talk a lot about rugby, and only because, you know, he's massively passionate about it, and then my brothers are as well. So kind of Sunday lunches are. I remember when I used to play at Fylde. So me and my brother played Saturday, and it would take about a minute into, you know, dinner before we got a lowdown on what we were good at and what we were bad at and how useless we were. But you know, still now he's pretty good with it. He'll, you know, he doesn't, if there's little things he thinks I should be working on, then you know, he's pretty subtle about it. He doesn't.
So growing up then, you must have been exposed to quite a number of very, very good rugby players through your dad.
Yeah, like a lot of his mates were ex-rugby players, and I know the game was different by then, it was amateur, but yeah, it was, you know, the guys that, you know, there were guys that still watch a lot of rugby and kind of going down to Fylde and watching my brother play as a teenager and youngster, you know, just speaking to all these, because Fylde were one of the top teams back in the day, so all these guys had played county or international rugby, so being able to, you know, listen to them and what they thought of the game was probably...
Well, that was the path. I can't really work out how it used to... Was it the co-ed leagues that they used to have?
Yeah, so you basically had a set fixture list each year, and yeah, it just kind of went off kind of how many games you won, and then each, you know, it'd be like a nationwide rank, or like UK ranking, because of
yeah,
like
they used to do it in the Times, didn't they? It was like a 20 or... I mean, it's bizarre to me, because the first year I really started paying attention to rugby was the year that Northampton won the Heineken Cup. Right, that was the first. So before that, I have no idea what actually happened. And then I heard about this thing. It's like they used to literally just rank all the teams in the country, and that was that. There's 48 teams in a league. They didn't play each other, but the fixture secretaries had to go around and just make up fixtures.
They always had the same fixture at the same weekend.
Yeah.
So and you'd always have your derby games around like Christmas period, and then the county scene was massive back then.
Yeah,
so
it was.
That was like the. Almost like the selection process for, and then you obviously have international trial games, but that was like the big selection game for international rugby. And you know, that was from listening to what my daddy say. He said they used to get enormous crowds to those games.
So was your dad still playing when? Were you able to watch your dad play much?
No. So he retired in 1982, I think.
Oh, right.
So I was 10 years before I was even born.
Been
so
born,
yeah,
yeah.
He
2 years before I was born.
Yeah. Yeah. So he he retired with a neck and head injury, something that probably would be sorted now with kind of the kind of medical things around now. But yeah, so I never really got to. I've seen a few clips of it on the black and white VCR, but yeah, that's about it.
We had a coach at Broughton Park who was roughly your dad's age, I'd say, called Kevin O'Brien, and he had one Irish cap. He was a lovely, lovely fella, good coach, and he had one Irish cap, and on this one Irish cap, he makes the most horrendous error, and and underneath a high ball, and England score. And from what I can remember, I could be wrong, but from what I can remember, that was the difference in the game. His awful high ball, and the shame of it was that was the only game that they would repeat on ESPN Classics over and over again. Just always couldn't get away from it.
Yeah.
So when you go up to Durham, then what were you expecting to do if it wasn't to become a professional rugby player?
No idea. I'm
really?
Still there now. Yeah. So I went to. I applied to geography just because it's kind of the subject at school that was I'd probably most interested in. It wasn't the subject particularly best at, but then I knew that there's low contact hours at university with geography, and it was a pretty good, my brother did it as well at Manchester, and it's a pretty good degree to do, so I just did that. I was interested in it, but I was just going purely just to get a degree, and I've still no idea what I'd do with it.
Did you finish your degree?
Yeah, so I finished it, yeah. So I had to say, it had to be a bit awkward with Sale at times in my last year and say, I remember I played Montpellier and Durham were actually really strict with letting you have time off.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they're quite funny, Durham, about academic ones first, which is fair enough, but then I was like, well, you're getting a lot of publicity for me playing against Montpellier and I played that game.
Yeah, quite a lot, I'd say.
Yeah, and then the week after, they wouldn't release me until like the Friday before the game. So it was a shame, but like...
That must be a really awkward conversation for you and...
It was, it kind of put me in a tough place at times because I obviously wanted to play, but then I'd done 2.5 years of this degree and I wasn't willing to give it up at that stage. So I kind of said to Sale after that, I was like, look, I'll come back in the holidays.
Yeah.
Like, I'll stay in contact, tell you how I'm doing. And also I was captain of Durham University, so I had big commitments with that and... You know, we took our rugby really serious up there. We had kind of the most successful period when I was up there as a team. So, you know, we had a pretty good team up there. So I was loving playing for them and loving being at Sale as well.
Now, did Durham have a Saturday team as well as a...
They did back in the day, but not when I think that got stopped probably a couple of years before I came. But, yeah, we had a good crop of players up when I was there for the 3 years. And it would be interesting if we did play in the National Leagues, how we'd get on.
Yeah.
I think we probably would have been National 2 North, that kind of standard. Because looking at our team, we had Simon Hammersley was our fullback, who's at Newcastle now.
Okay.
Sean Robinson, second row at Newcastle. And a couple of others that played Championship rugby as well. So we were pretty decent teams. So.
Hammersley's a very good player.
Yeah, he's a quality player. Kind of looks pretty old school, laid back kind of guy.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, well, he looks like a stick man. He looks like someone's like drew him with a pencil. Or at least it did, and he's actually filled out quite a bit now. But when he first arrived, we used to nickname him the prefect because he just looked.
Oh yeah, he'd wear black boots and like just the most old school looking player. But he's class. But he took him a while to get used to kind of having to go to the gym and stuff like that.
So were Durham in are they in Bucks?
Yeah, is that so Bucks and. Yeah, they've brought in this new Super League at the moment,
yeah,
which is pretty good. Yeah, it's good standard of rugby, and we were in Bucks North, which is probably easier than Bucks South. So Loughborough are our big rivals.
Yeah, and they're seriously good.
Yeah, well, they're all right.
Yeah, so it's amazing how many lads have had exposure to that league and gone on to do better things.
Yeah, well, because I played a couple of years for English students as well, and yeah. It was, you know, off the top of head, I remember Loz Lazowski was our outside centre.
Oh, was he?
Who else was it? Harry Williams played tight head for one of the games. Loads of lads played students. I think Jack Yendel the year before me. So, yeah, Tom Dunn. So there's so many players who've played students and now knocking around the Premiership. It's
well, I mean, there might be one, hopefully, who joins the NFL soon. I've interviewed Christian Scotland Williamson here.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and he did the same thing as you, effectively. I think he's at Loughborough.
Was he? Yeah, he probably. Yeah, I think he was. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think his highlight of him smashing is it Reader?
Oh yeah.
Reader. I mean that's got to be worth at least an extra zero on the end of your contract.
Yeah, but yeah, he's a smoke boy. I'm kind of glad he's going to the NFL, actually.
Yeah. I mean, I tell you what, if you can make it there, I mean, you only need to really play a few years before you've made almost a career's worth of rugby money.
It's phenomenal. Like the basic salary is like $1 million, though, isn't it? Sign on,
yeah. It's so. Like, you get, I think, 600,000 first year, and then it goes up each and every year. It's Dan Carter money for, like, a third choice receiver.
Yeah, nuts, isn't it?
Yeah. So, how are you finding this season then? You've been struggling a little bit with it. Is it pectoral injury that you
bicep, picked? Yeah. I tore my bicep against Quinn's away. It's like sixth game of the season, so always a pretty terrible time to get injured, really, midway through the season. So, yeah, it wasn't a bad injury to come back from compared to other injuries I've had here at Sale. But, I came back in January and I really started to enjoy my rugby again. And then, I think I played about 7 or 8 games on the bounce, getting some form together. So,
yeah
it's been. And then it's kind of weird, like, the end of the season feels quite stop-start because you get weeks off and then...
It is.
It's a bit strange, really. So, it was...
If you're not in European competition... It's a very patchy schedule.
Yeah, so it's so I think, you know, we've been going well kind of second half of the season, so, you know, hopefully we can just finish off strong last couple of games.
Now, when you first came to prominence nationally as a player, you were doing most of your work, in fact all of your work, at number 8. And then you moved over to the second row. But you've always played second row in some capacity. Why did you decide to go back to second row from 8? What was thinking there?
I think probably speaking with the England coaches, and England saw me more as a second row, more predominantly a second row who could play back row. So
yeah.
I think, like, kind of last year, well, all my time at Sale, I've always...
it's Tim Cocker.
What's going on?
Pins are out. How you doing, right? Yeah, good. How are you?
Take a seat, mate.
Thank you very much. What's going on?
Tim Cocker's debut on the Rugby Dungeon.
Wow. This is like, Marvel and... what's the other one?
DC.
DC and Marvel. This is like a coming together of universes.
Where were we?
Second row.
Yeah,
so...
Second row.
Yeah, so... Yeah, I mean, I've always played a few games here and there for Sale at the second row. But this season was where that's where I played most of my rugby. Well, before injury, I played all the games at the second row. And it's different. It's different. I think playing second row kind of at FARDS level and university level, it's nowhere near as physical. So
yeah.
It doesn't sap your legs as much, where Premiership kind of winter months, that's
hard.
It is hard graft. And, you know, I don't mind that, but yeah. But then I came back from my injury, playing first 2 games, played at number 8, really enjoyed it, and then purely because of kind of we had guys injured away, and then moved back into second row, so I probably prefer playing at 8.
Yeah, I mean, 8 is good
for
Sale.
Well, for Sale especially. Played all my best rugby for Sale there, so.
Yeah, definitely, because, yeah. When you were getting spoken of very, very strongly for England, you know, you were dominating with kind of, how can I put this in a polite way, kind of an unorthodox running style. Once you got up to speed, you're very, very hard to stop.
Yeah, and that's...
You don't get that from secondary, don't get that
yeah, high, the high knees, wasn't
yeah,
it?
High knees, yeah.
Trying to tackle those high knees.
I know, everyone, I never really got it, because I've said, but actually when I tackle someone like, who's a similar build to me, kind of, I remember, like, James Gasol, I was like, oh, it's really awkward to tackle that
yeah.
guy. And actually you don't, because you're this height, you don't actually realise, but I suppose if your knee's coming up here, then, you know, it can be difficult. But, yeah, so a number 8 probably gives you more freedom to kind of carry those outside channels and get a bit more space to kind of open up, where second row, you're making tighter carries as well, so it's a bit more difficult.
Is there any chance we'll see you moving back into number 8?
Hopefully. I'll play anywhere to get in the team, and I'm
exactly
benching at the moment, so I'll play anywhere at the moment.
But
so.
I mean, that kind of just shows, doesn't it, where Sale have come from and where they are now. I mean, they've never been able to deploy a bench which can change a game, and now they can.
And from that point of view, just to add to what JB's saying, that means probably in a way that, and I think good professional clubs that have to have this, a sense that whoever you are, you have a bit of an off day, I can drop you and someone really good can come in. And I think that's where Sale have been at this season, where they haven't been able to be at.
Yeah, definitely. And I, you know, speaking to Dimes and then the other lads as well, this is there's been games where actually I haven't been on form for Sale, kind of last year, year before, and there wasn't really anyone else to come in.
Yeah.
Especially because being a line-out forward as well, I kind of had to play.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Because you don't think about that as well, the dynamics of the pack. So, you know, I've actually played probably some decent rugby this year, better than kind of last year, but as well as being captain as well last year. So difficult to get dropped as captain. But yeah, so that's a good thing about Sale. You got likes of, you know, myself and TJ, who were probably starting most games, kind of we probably played too many minutes at times, and now you've got that impact coming off the bench. So
yeah, I think it's important for the players on the field to know when the bench comes on, you know, the team gets stronger. I mean, that psychologically must be absolutely massive.
Yeah, and I think it's just good for kind of like almost the health of the squad in training as well. If you've got two almost packs that are going against each other, training becomes more competitive, it becomes more fun, and it brings the best out of each other. So I think that's the one good thing, certainly about the pack this year. But the backs, I know, still, you know, we've shown kind of a couple of injuries and suspensions, and that's what can happen. But other clubs have had that as well, like Wasps have been struggling at times this year.
I love it that you look at, I think Mike Haley's seasons have been a perfect example. Started off really strong. He had a couple of games that weren't up to his standard. He'd probably be the first to say so. And then he couldn't get back in the team for a bit. And then he has to force his way back in, and has been outstanding when he came back.
Exactly.
That's the competitive.
It's almost like similar to me. Also, you know, say you've dropped to bench, team wins, then there's less inclination to make changes. So it's just part of the sport, part of any sport.
Now, what does a Premiership club captain do? Because I know what the Tok H captain does. That's who I play for. Picks the teams, arranges the socials, that kind of thing. What do you do in a Premiership squad?
Yeah, well, I was similar, because being captain Durham University, I sort of kit out, had to drop fixture cards off and all that kind of stuff. And then actually, it's more high pressure being a Premiership rugby captain. It's just the on-field kind of sign, leadership. You'll be involved in, obviously, off the field, you'll be involved in senior players' meetings and lead them. And obviously, you're on the pitch. It's more like dealing with referees and stuff like that. You've got to have good kind of relationships with them and that kind of thing.
Now, referees, they're interesting. Do you go as
far... This is where Josh's media training alarm bell rings. Like,
yeah. They're all very good. We take one game at a time. Do you go to the extent of, like, I mean, obviously you know their names, but, you know, do you go and buy them a drink after? Do you ask them, you know, how their week's been?
I wouldn't go that far. I'd always go and speak to them after a game.
Yeah.
And I'd always ask them politely about decisions they've made during the game. So, like, oh, was kind of a player offside at that point? Is that why? You know, and stuff like that. And just try and speak to them on almost a professional level.
Yeah.
Try and get feedback off them. You know what, I remember a couple of games last year, early on especially, I think Ian Tempest was reffing, and Ian's been around the club for a bit, and I probably spoke to him the wrong way, and then learned from next time that chatting to him after the game and go, right, this is what he wants more of, kind of thing. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so how much do you think a captain can influence a ref, if influence is the right word?
Maybe, yeah, you'd like to think not, but I'm sure...
I mean, if you've got an idea of an interpretation of a certain law, presumably you want to get that across to them as quickly as you can and make them agree with you.
Well, yeah, I think, and also you get stats out before a game. It's like, for example, this is what the referee this weekend, he gives most penalties for, kind of off, like not releasing at the breakdown, stuff like that. And so you kind of got trigger points in your head. It's like, this is what we need to watch out for.
Oh.
And this is what referees are kind of hot on. There's also certain trends in refereeing, kind of, whether it's something like feeding it a scrum or like, so things coming in and out of the game.
On that one, I'm curious to know what you think then, because Sale's season and maybe English rugby clubs generally in Europe's season could have been different had they maybe, I don't know whether it's they adjusted or got used to, but the difference in the way that the game's interpreted by referees of different...
Especially the breakdown.
Top 14, Pro 14 versus Premiership at the breakdown particularly. I think probably there's other decisions I know Sale were unhappy about, but you could argue that actually cost you a place in the knockout stages and potentially other English clubs as well.
Yeah, I'm trying to think what. There was the one at Exeter, was there at home? The like, off the feet kind of
one at Exeter.
Clear out, and then I can't remember what else, but yeah.
The one in Leon where they jumped the tackle.
Oh, that was ridiculous.
That was actually ridiculous.
I remember I was there, because that was the week after I did my arm, and I decided to still go out anyway and have a nice weekend in Leon. But yeah, that was ridiculous, that decision. I mean, anyone who's ever played a game of rugby knows that you can't jump into a tackle like that.
Yeah.
And then to get actually pinged for an illegal tackle was...
It was quite an incredible 3 minutes of play, or 2 minutes of play, because it was right at the end.
Yeah. So, they got a penalty, yeah. But anyway.
Do you still have moments like that in amateur or university, or even in the early sale days or whatever, that you still, in the back of your mind, still bug you like that? Or do you must just have to let it go, right?
Yeah, let it. I can't think of many at my time, but yeah, I'm sure there's, I think we were always okay. We never, at that level, you kind of move on quickly. But,
you have to.
Yeah, yeah. I had one against high-flying Burnley last year, so obviously Josh can relate to playing like level 8, and they had a kicker who just couldn't kick. We gave the last play of the game, we gave a penalty away. We got back 10. The ref said that we weren't back 10. He moved it forward 10, and then he kicked it. It literally skimmed the bar, and there was a difference between promotion and relegation.
So he said you weren't back 10 for a penalty kick?
Yeah, so we weren't back.
A place kick?
No. They were thinking about what to do. They tapped and went. And, you know, we asked him, are we back? He said, yeah. He said, yeah, not back. And they kicked it over. Devastating.
Yeah, that is.
This is getting rather egg tracery, so we might want to transition.
Sorry.
It's okay, mate.
I can ask Josh stuff on...
Yeah, yeah.
We'll mention this rugby dungeon on Egg Chasers, and if we mention Egg Chasers now, you can put the two together
exactly.
In a puzzle.
Exactly. So just tell me a little bit about how you feel about sale season this year, and just a bit about how you think they're going to go next year, and the way the club's trending.
I think it's definitely on an upward trend, definitely. We had a tough season last year, a very tough season, and you know, we learn, and they always say that you learn most from kind of your defeats and disappointments. And I think that was definitely the case of us. We brought a lot in kind of off the pitch in terms of kind of more kind of like involvement.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Senior players and stuff like that, we kind of became more professional off the pitch, and you know, the club's definitely going in the right direction. And this season, you know, the two games left now, it's kind of an air of frustration about us at the moment, because it's like, what if? There's been a lot of games where...
What if Newcastle at home?
Exactly.
What if Exeter at home?
Newcastle away, you know, there's kind of five or six, Bath away, and there's a lot of frustration now. Every team in the league will have those kind of what if games. And you kind of hope that, you know, over the course of the season, you know, you can't look back and say what if on like five or six games, because you know, it becomes too many. And then, you know, we've also had a couple go our way, so I think we're still in the hunt kind of for that top four. We're not mathematically out of it. It's going to be tough, but Exeter, we tend to go well down there. I think we play good rugby down there.
Have they not won? Sale have won down there.
Yeah,
before,
we won 4 years ago.
Was
we won
the end
50
of the season.
Odd. Yeah, end of season.
Yeah.
It was a bit of a beatdown from what I remember.
Yeah, I think it's on when Exeter didn't have much to play for, and kind of things were going on there as well. And but you know, in the last couple of years, we've you know, they've beaten us, but we've always been in the game down there, and we've always played pretty some good rugby down there. So, you know, it's a huge last two games for us.
It is,
really. We've just got to give it a crack, and then, you know, hopefully we get that top six. And
well, Tigers need to do you a favour on the weekend.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you've got to batter Tigers, and you've got to beat Exeter, and you've also got to hope that, I think if Newcastle lose into Saracens, you're in.
Yeah.
So it's not actually...
Stranger things have happened in sport and in rugby, but...
And there's also Gloucester as well, who can sneak in.
Yeah, of course, yeah. And then...
They don't need to qualify in the league now. I wonder how that changes the dynamic.
Could I also... I don't know. I saw the tweet.
No, that. I know what you're going to ask, and I don't know the answer. I was hoping you'd know.
What happens to seventh place? I asked Will Hudson today. I've seen his tweet. So I'm like, does that mean that if you finish seven in the Premiership now, and you get... I don't know. Anyway.
Oh, it might do. It might do, because on the... Now, I think I know...
It's happened in the past. It's happened in the past.
I'm guessing at this answer, right? But the French clubs have seven teams. Is that right?
Yes, they have.
And it might be weighted to how well you do in European competition. So if there's not a French team in the final, they might lose their seventh place, their seventh team, and give it to the Premiership, who only have six. Maybe. Maybe I made that up. I don't know.
All I knew is that had...
I know Emmanuel know the answer anyway.
Oh,
so.
Anyway. Someone will know. When you do know, let us know.
Yeah. Are you active much on social media?
Yeah, I am. Well, ish. I wouldn't say I was massively...
You're not James Haskell yet?
No. I don't think anyone's Haskell's level. But
What's your channels and where do we find you?
Twitter is at Josh Beaumont. Yeah, just go down that. I'll be some number behind it. I think.
Year of birth, 4, probably. 8 or 5.
Yeah, you'll hopefully pop up. And then Instagram as well is probably another go-to. You can get a few snippets of what happens at Sale on Instagram.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for coming down. Hope that you enjoyed it, and we'll have to do it again soon. In fact, we'll do it again in about 3 seconds when we do egg chasers.
Excellent. Cheers.
Cheers, mate.
Hey, folks. I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.